Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast, the Frontside Podcast. I have no idea what episode it is. I don't know. I'm not very well prepared today, Brandon, and my left shift key is non-functioning, so I'm not sure if I can do this.
Without a left shift key?
I know.
How does one live? I think we're on episode 35.
35? Yeah. Okay. It's hard when you're a Dvorak guy.
What does left shift do for Dvorak that's different from your normal average Joe?
I can't hit the question mark, but I guess you can't hit the question mark
either. Yeah, that's not going to be.
I can't hit the question mark that's more conveniently located to reduce carpal tunnel syndrome. So it's particularly acute to me.
If you're just tuning in, this is Keyboard Chat with Brandon and Charles. Yeah, how's life, man?
Yeah, it's doing pretty good. I'm over the soreness in my fingers. Speaking of carpal tunnel syndrome from doing the rock climbing.
Mm, yeah.
I woke up with this like burning in my forearms. I wasn't really sore anywhere else in my body except like the tops of my arms and the bottoms of my arms, and not like up like on the upper arm, like the lower arm where all the finger muscles are. And that's like a clear sign that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, even what little climbing I did left me with like a useless claw. Here, grab this. Just kidding. You can't.
Nope.
Yeah, that's cool. We don't really talk about this much publicly, but and we can't say it on our podcast, but we have a monthly thing where we kind of knock off a Friday, work half a day from a remote location and try to find something fun to do, and we call it F It Friday. And so this last one was at a climbing bouldering project, which is apparently the biggest bouldering gym in America or the world
or something like that. Yeah. It won't be for long, but I mean, it's huge.
It's really cool.
It's been 2 years in the works and,
it's cool. Yeah. It has like a kind of a coffee shop vibe upstairs where you can kind of hang out and work, mm-hmm. and it's got great Wi-Fi. Actually, like if I was like a remote work person, I'd probably spend a fair amount of time there. It had a really, really cool vibe. And then, you can just...
Yeah, we spent all morning upstairs, got lunch and came back and did, you know, an hour of climbing, and then went home. But that was enough to kill my fingers.
Yeah, but it's cool to get exposed to, like, I would never have done that in a million years. And Lydia and Alex were like, hey, we should do this bouldering gym thing. And I think that's really cool that we try kind of different activities that otherwise might not, you know, really get into.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time we just go to a coffee shop.
Yeah. Oh, well, when you have Mozart's in your town, so you have a coffee shop on a deck on a lake, like that's pretty tough to beat.
Yeah. Next to the Hula Hut.
Yeah. Next to the Hula Hut, which if you are from Austin, you know that is good times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's been kind of it's been a fun 2016 so far. I mean, it's been a little hectic.
Yeah, a little hectic. But we've been
wanting to talk about this topic for a long time. We've been wanting to talk about, and today is an extraordinarily ironic day to be having this conversation. So I just want to like dump it all out there, and then we'll let our editor listen, and if he likes it, he can keep it.
He'll be like, no, we're shutting this
down. This episode will never ship. So these are going to be a little. Yeah. It's going to be a little raw today, I think.
Yeah, but I feel like it's a conversation that's kind of been happening, out on the internet. Yeah.
We wanted to title the podcast How We Hire, because it cuts to the reason that we wanted to run a company instead of go work for somebody else. And at least for me, and so I don't want to speak too much for you, but then there's a flip side to that is really important, that's similar. And so we're going to have to wind up talking about both. And I guess we'll tack them in order, but just to kind of get this out there so that we can make sure that we come back to it later. So our one of our basically our first full-time employee, besides you or me, really, announced today that he's leaving and he's going to go find something else, and we're going to help him find something else. And it's hard not to take personally. It's not like this wasn't a blindside. We've had these conversations and been trying to help figure out what the right next steps are. But that was dealing with the flip side of how we hire, of like how people leave, is just mm-hmm. as important. But I want to kind of, and we also had an interview on Monday with somebody that we don't do that very often. So I kind of want to dial it back and then maybe tell the story from the beginning of like what the life cycle is, the way that we do this, that we've like through trial and error have figured out a way that seems to really work for us. Mm-hmm. and then talk about the end of the life cycle and what that looks like. Because I'm you know.
Yeah, get both sides of the story.
Yeah, and then maybe it will fish out some feedback from people about what could potentially be done better.
Yeah, I know our hiring process definitely is weird. You know, I was actually having this conversation with my wife last night, and she was like, "Man, you guys must not be very picky at all, because you know, it seems like you hire every single person that you interview." And I was just like, "Oh no, that's not it at all."
No, that's just the pickiness that has already happened.
Right. I was like, there's been so many more interviews before the interview. Yep.
So let's talk about that. Our hire rate for people that we brought in for our interview is hovering around 100%.
Yeah, I think it's right there. Maybe 100% or a little bit lower at 100%.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. The 1 to 100, you know, the 100 to 100 range. 100%
range, yeah.
So there are flaws in our process, but it is certainly not perfect. But where we have had just tremendous hires over the last year. Every person that we have brought on has been someone that has exceeded all of our already relatively lofty expectations. And so I want to talk about how that has been successful for us and then think about ways we might be able to improve it, because there are certainly trade-offs and downsides and pain points associated with the way that we do it. And then talk about the offboarding process and what that looks like when it's time for somebody to leave. I definitely have feels wrapped on it because of, you know, it's personal when all those things, we talk about it like it's super professional and you want to have the processes buttoned up in a way that's professional, but it's still very personal, especially when you're in a smaller company. Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about, so first off, the interview process, let's start from the interview and kind of work backwards. So like,
cause that really is the tip of the mm-hmm. iceberg, but we do have an interview process that, I don't know the first time that we employed it, was, but we've been talking about it for a long time. And it's been really, really, really effective. Do you want to describe that process?
Sure. Yeah. So it's pretty darn simple. And I've seen a lot of people on Twitter kind of arguing back and forth about whether this is a good idea. And
really? About this? Yes. You're about to say
is
a good
idea?
Yeah,
some people think this is not a good idea. And I want to listen to their point of view on this stuff, but it has been so effective for us that I feel like I have a strong counterexample. But we buy a day of a person's time as a consultant. We actually have them fill out the paperwork. We hire them as a 1099 consultant for one day. We get them.
I mean, if we could, I'd like to do it for a
week. If we and I've seen
if it was possible, but it's very disruptive to their schedule.
And I think I've talked to other agencies that do this for a longer period of time. But our experience is we've been able to suss out in a day the stuff around skill level that you wouldn't in like a sit down technical whiteboardy type interview, and there's diminishing returns over the course of a week. So we sit and pair with somebody. We start the day and say, okay, like let's huddle together and figure out what the day is going to look like. What projects can we put this person on with whom? And it usually winds up being about half open source and about half client work, where we get them under an NDA and we get them to pair on potentially some client work and certainly some of our open source stuff and stuff that looks relatively tractable and usually targeted at the experience level that we estimate this person coming in to be at. The purpose of that is really it seems like for me anyway, is to put you in contact with that person and have you as sort of like our technical lead to suss out this person's strengths and weaknesses and where they need work and where they'll need special attention. But the whole point of the interview is to figure out how we would be successful working with this person. Because usually the filters, any real filters have been employed beforehand. And so the interview is to really suss out, this is where this person's likely at. This is what they need to be successful. This is what a plan would look like if we hire them. So the interview is really like the final stage. The filtering, except in maybe extreme cases where a person comes across as very knowledgeable and is intending to defraud or whatever. Like, we haven't hit that case yet.
Right. Or is very, you know, belligerent or something like that.
Yep.
Which we also haven't.
Yeah, we have definitely not. Those filters usually get employed first. Like we trust a lot of our instincts on some of the other stuff. And I want to get into what some of those filters are to get to that point. But really the interview process is very simple in that it is a day of paid pairing. And the benefits of that are so numerous. That we take the pressure off of this person. Hey, you're just going to pair with us and we're going to work on projects that we're already working on. And the goal here is this is not to evaluate you in terms of we're not going to grade you on some scale. The purpose is to figure out how we work together and what that experience is like and how you would be successful working here. And so this is not a test.
Right. No, I like the way you say that, how they would be successful here, because that really is kind of what's going on is, you know, they're working on actual client work. They're working on real open source projects that we actually work on. And so we're saying, you know, how can we integrate this person into our team? And if the answer is that we can't actually, there's not kind of the right, you know, the angles don't quite line up, and, you know, this person, you know, we wouldn't be able to bill for them soon enough to make sense to the business, or they're interested in different type of work than we have to offer, or, you know, given our current configuration of clients, there's not, you know, the exact type of work that would fit with their style or something like that. Then, you know, then that would come out. But we really are looking for, you know, okay, if this person were a part of our team right now today, what are the real ways that they could contribute?
That's a really good way of putting it. It's like environmental conditions. Like, can we create, after this interview, do we feel confident that we can create the environmental conditions that are likely to draw this person's success out? Mm-hmm. And if not, then it's a no, but it's like a no attached to like, hey, this is not about you. This is about our inability to create the conditions that are likely to cause you to be successful. And then we can actually help them understand what those conditions are.
And right. And I think it's patently obvious to both parties, yeah. Which is so,
yep.
You know.
Yeah, it's a really useful exercise. But the other thing that it does is it shows the candidate, and people don't put enough emphasis on this, that finding great developers is really difficult. And when you run a candidate through your like whiteboard diagram bullcrap interview, you are showing the candidate you don't really value them as an individual. Like you're getting off on such the wrong foot to in terms of a recruiting perspective of showing them, hey, listen, here's how we do things, and we're going to try to cram you into that, and we're not really interested in what your unique potential contributions are. And so by paying them for their time, we say we value your time in terms of money, and then kind of tailoring the day to their strengths. And I learned something from Trek recently, where Trek actually Trek Lewacki at Popular Pays, I think he's at now. He's an Ember Core team member, and he's a really cool guy. And he was saying on Twitter, they actually sit down and ask their candidates at the upfront in the interview, what could we do for you to be successful in this interview? Like, how would you show us what you're really good at? And try to set those conditions up explicitly. And we tried asking that question, and I don't think we really, I don't know that we really got it dialed in, but you get a sense for what that person feels like their strengths are. And then you can kind of try to angle the trajectory of the interview toward that. A lot of people do like take home projects, which I think is kind of cool, especially if you pay them for their time on that. We don't really do that because so much of what we do is pairing oriented anyway.
Right.
So it's not a right. Great example of the kind of work you'll do by taking something and going and, you know, hunkering down alone.
Right. I actually think that strategy paid off, because now that you say it, I didn't even realize that you asked that question at the beginning of the interview that we just had. But it was valuable, and it ended up steering the course of the interview. Because if you recall, one of the things she said was, you know, she had been doing a lot of design work and, you know, work in CSS. And so, you know, given the choice between two projects, we ended up working on the color project.
Yeah.
That was kind of dealing with the programmatic color APIs, because I thought, okay, well, this is something that she's actually been dealing with recently and been, you know, said that she likes and excels at. So, you know, we'll go with that choice. And that was actually my second choice of which project mm-hmm. to work on. But because you actually asked that question, you know, it steered the course of the interview, and I think in a positive direction.
Yeah, and only you, man. Only you would take, like, okay, we're going to do colors that's like CSS, but we're going to make it deeply, deeply programmatic. We're going to have this be, like, very, very mathy. Although, I guess you have...
Mm-hmm. No. The math part was, like,
you've
abstracted.
Already Yeah, it was cool. We had a really great experience on this interview. Every interview we've had has been it's been fun. It's been a good experience for the person receiving the interview. So I feel like we can label that section of this as successful. But it's the stuff that's leading up to that interview. So the interview itself, like results at the end of the day, say, okay, here's your check. Thank you very much for coming in. We're going to huddle on this and get back to you. And, you know, we will sit down and kind of debrief and figure out how this person could be successful here and whether we can create environmental conditions that will result in them being successful. And there are situations where I could see that being no. And sometimes it's kind of like not certain and you take a little bit of a risk. But every time we've done this so far, it has been we've had a pretty clear answer by the end of that process. But there's so much work that leads up to that.
And I think it's not just us, too.
What do you mean?
I think like we have a very clear answer, but I think it's also, you know, and obviously on the flip side of it, too, like the candidate has a pretty clear answer.
True.
In fact, you know, that was even, I think, some explicit feedback that we got from one of the people we hired last year was that, you know, after I left the interview, I kind of let it sink in that I'd actually, you know, gotten paid to work on real, you know, real client work. And, you know, and my, the contributions that I made during my interview were actually going to be going into production. And
where was this?
This was here.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about some interview that you went on and that you got the idea from. I was hoping to discover the genesis of this.
This is afterwards, okay. Right? Someone who like ended up accepting, our offer and coming to work here, you know, talking in retrospect about the interview process, like it was also a fairly clear answer, in his mind, because he understood what it was like to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that if you can help somebody understand that they're providing meaningful value during the course of the interview, like that's a pretty strong signal that you're going to be able to work in a job where you provide meaningful value in your day to day work. And that I think that's a huge part of what people want to do. Yeah. All of those things. I think this is kind of an upward spiral of good things that happen when you do things this way. There are certainly other ways to do it. The downsides are the filtration process to get to that point is really poorly defined. And it's really leaky.
Yep.
And it can lead to a lot of potential false negatives and a lot of, if you're not careful, it can lead to a lot of selection bias where you only pick people like you. So it's all at that point, it's all about the funnel.
You have no idea where that funnel is, right? Yep. You know, it's hanging out there somewhere in space, but the lines are very ill-defined and you don't know who you're filtering. Yep. There's a lot of people that you're filtering out that you might not want to be filtering.
You have to be really, really intentional about building a funnel to feel inclusive and attract diverse candidates.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where – that's one area where we need to improve because, yeah, that whole – the funnel is very fuzzy for us.
Yeah, so what do you do to fill the top of the funnel, right? Is it putting advertisements in newsletters maybe? Is it – like we haven't done that, but I've seen it done and we've certainly talked about it. Is it putting – is it sponsoring things like conferences? Is it – there are creative ways to do it. There are uncreative ways to do it. You can throw time at it. You can throw money, or you can do nothing and hope that people approach you, which has been our predominant strategy. Every candidate that's come through the door has said, I was really shocked that I went to your website and I didn't even see a careers page. So I didn't think you were hiring. This has been every candidate we have ultimately hired has had to jump over that fence of thinking this company doesn't really hire. When in reality we do, we're so busy about all of our other stuff that we haven't put together a page to explain to people what it's like to work here.
And every time we facepalm and then
go back,
never do anything about it.
Yeah,
we're like, oh yeah, we should get on.
Somebody should really do something about all the problems. So that funnel is dangerously leaky. And potentially excluding people that we really would like to work with, and if you're not careful about your funnel, it can exclude entire groups of people that you want to potentially work with. And so, let's talk a little bit about the top of the funnel. Like, how do you think like people can fill the top of that funnel?
You mean like
how would we improve how we do that, or how have we been deliberate about it, or like what do you see in terms of like putting like. I don't know, like having access to a large number of people so that they...
I think anytime you're involved with any community, you're going to have that. That's the primary, like in my experience, I don't know what we should be doing. Honestly, I don't know like what we should be doing, but I can tell you like in retrospect, looking at what we did, what worked, and that is anytime we were heavily engaged with a particular community, that's where... recruiting came from. And that, I mean, it's so obvious, but it makes sense, right? So like we're involved with the Ember community. And so, you know, we met a lot of people through there involved. You know, you were doing mentoring at Maker Square, which is a local code school. And so,
yeah,
you know, hires came from there. So I just have to imagine that any community that you're likely to engage with, you know, in, you know, deeply and authentically, you're going to get recruits.
I just realized, so I did two mentorships at two different cohorts of Maker Square, and there is one person from each of those cohorts working here now.
Exactly.
That is interesting.
Exactly.
I had literally not thought of that.
Yeah. And so, you know, by engaging with you know, there's Maker Square, but it's also like, you know, you in particular are very, very involved, you know, in basically the mentoring community. And I think part of that was because you benefited tremendously from the mentors you had in the community. And so, I mean, obviously you enjoy doing it, but I think you also felt like a kind of a,
obligation,
yeah. Right? The word,
no, like, but like a karmic,
like carrying karmic on debt. The church. Yeah.
Yeah.
To make sure that you played your role as soon as you were able to, as a mentor in the society. So you're involved with Maker Square and Rails Girls and, you know, any number of community efforts. Yeah. I think that, you know, being directly and authentically involved in that kind of mentorship community.
Well, that's like how you met Bastion at Cafe Bedouins, yep. Here. We help organize the Ember user group here. You're right. There's a lot of,
I mean, really it's the same way. Ultimately, it's the same process that, you know, has driven sales for us historically, is being involved in communities. And it's just the other way around when really what you're trying to do is kind of sell the company to a potential employee.
Yeah. That's something, maybe that's almost worth its own sort of like discussion in a separate episode, because that deal of how mushy that all is of, I want to participate in a community and give back. This company needs to sell consulting services in order to continue to deserve to exist. And the reason that we exist is we want to work with and mentor great people, but we need to be recruiting. And that comes out of the community stuff. And it's all this big soup that if you're not careful can kind of feel kind of scammy. Like, am I going to speak at this conference just as like a sales tool? Like, well, no, I have something really important that I want to share with people. But as a benefit of that or a net effect of that, people know who we are. And there's this really, like, it's hard to be sure that you're putting the right thing first and to gauge your own intentions when you have financial benefit to gain from doing the right thing, you know? Like that's a really tricky and delicate thing. All I can say is that we really do, when it comes down to making a decision that is about financial impact or the impact on the people that we work with or potentially could work with, I can say for sure after the last few years that we've done the work to do the right thing for people. And that gets put to the test periodically.
Yeah. And that's what I mean when I say deeply and authentically engaged. Because people can, you know, people aren't idiots.
And so that's the other thing.
They know when you're being extractive.
Yes. So founding a company on principles of fighting the extractive work cultures out in the world has bought us that some of that goodwill. What I would kind of, I don't know, like I'm I don't want to jump into the other end of it too quickly, but they're kind of tied together because it's about doing the work and doing the hard things of that don't necessarily result in immediate financial benefit. And so we have talked about like when it's time for people to leave, how we kind of know that and how we handle that and how we handle the transition, how we feel about it.
Yeah. And we've definitely had several people leave over the years, and you know, in the same vein as the hiring process, you know, it's in every single instance that I can think of, it's been, you know, it's been amicable and, you know, and even sometimes like uplifting, if such can be said. I mean, there's the realization that this is like a launching point for someone. It's not a lateral motion that, you know, that they really are like getting onto a ship and sailing off to you know. Now I'm just like,
no, I know what you mean.
What about pie in the sky type stuff?
So let's ground this in reality and talk about
exactly.
So you and I were walking around this space. We are in the same space that we were 3 years ago. It was about 3 years ago that you and I first started talking about the potential to maybe work together. And I would come and hang out.
About the hiring process. Man. I mean, talk about a long and arduous pre-filtering.
Oh, I made,
like, seriously.
I made you work for it, man.
Yeah.
I was happy. I had stuff going on, man. So, and I came to this office where I was like, what is this? This is like a guy, but he has an office. And why does this guy have this office? So it was like a single developer that had like two part-time apprentices periodically come through the office, but worked in a single corner of a 3,000 square foot office. So worked in like a 10 by 10 foot corner of a 3,000 square foot. I just couldn't figure any of this out. And I walked in and the space was just filled with the kind of furniture that you can when it's just you. And so it was like donated couches and a ping pong table. And I looked around and I was like, I don't know what the intention is here. Like I can't determine the intention. And so you and I talked for a really long time until we realized that we had the same goals. And you would walk around the space and say, this is what I see. I see people over here pairing on a really hard problem for a client. Somebody over here is writing a blog post. Somebody over here in this room is writing open source software for and shipping it. I want a learning dojo or a monastery of code for people to come and get better at software and put better software out into the world. Like, that was the sense that I got from you. And I was like, well, that's not happening, but that's a really cool idea. And I feel like if we could make that happen. I wasn't sure. It was a huge risk. And it still was sort of like a clubhouse at the time. But we wanted to try to see if we could make that happen. And so that's kind of where you had a couple of apprentices at the time, and Bastian was one of them, and it was really fun to see him level up. But it was like, at some point it was time for him to leave, and we handled that. I'm really happy with how that whole thing went down. Yeah. And we can talk about that. Yeah. And then at the same time, Stanley came in, and he would just come in and crash on the couch and code because he liked the company. Like, he liked to just hang out and code here. And at some point we're like,
yeah.
Stanley, it was after a few months of that, we're like, Stanley, stop it. just let us pay you for that. And that was how he got hired here, right? Like, he was already working here. We just had to change. We had to start paying him for it. And that casualness has really, really changed over time. And it's been him pushing us to take this more seriously and to be more deliberate and more focused about trying to make that dream a reality. I really do think we owe a lot of that to Stanley. And so when it's, you know, when he comes in today and says, hey, it's time for me to move on, it's very bittersweet. I took it very personally when Bastian came in and said, hey, I got this offer from Dell and I want to see if you guys can match it. And we talked about it and said, you know, you and I knew the right thing for him was to move on. And so we set our counteroffer situation up to where he would really have actually really, really, really wanted to stay in order to reject the offer from Dell. And he said, no, I'm going to go try something new. And that's really what we wanted for him. And it's really fun. We get to be good friends with him now. He works actually for a client of ours and we get to periodically actually have him in the office again and work with him. And I look forward to that kind of relationship with Stanley someday where we're still like, and it's more complicated because Stanley and I are very close friends as well.
Right. Well, and really with anybody who works here, I think one of the most interesting things that you often talk about is from day one that someone comes to work for us, we're already thinking about the day that you leave. And that's not like, oh my God, I wish this person would just get out of
here. Are you still here?
Are you still here? Like, but the point of this place is to invest in you and make you a more powerful developer so that one day you can go on to, you know, bigger and greater things. And so baked into that promise is the day that you walk out of here.
Do you know what I had to do?
And that's just implicit about who we are. And that doesn't mean you have to leave, but
that was the hard part for me.
We're constantly thinking about it.
So like that, what you're describing is exactly how I would describe it to people. I would say, I want to build a place that has enough gravity to it to have people come into its orbit and then slingshot them like NASA does with planets and stuff, is slingshot them onto their next thing with vastly increased velocity. Like, mm-hmm. we want to provide a lot of that velocity and direction for them to help them pick the next thing. And somebody came to me once that worked here and said, does that mean that you want me to leave? Like, why couldn't I work here for 10 years or 15 years or whatever? Like, oh, like I was put on the spot of like, oh, I have to take this company seriously enough that this is going to be here 10 or 15 years from now. This is not like a lark anymore. This is a company that people are investing their livelihoods into. And some people may choose that their trajectory is actually to help continue to grow and keep stable this thing and keep special this thing that we've mm-hmm. built. And so leaving the option open for somebody to stay was like something I hadn't really considered. Yeah. Wow, really? Staying in a job? That's a thing people do? All right. I mean, if that's what you want.
If you're crazy. But I mean, the point is that, it, you know, the moment you stop growing – or, you know, that this isn't like actually isn't increasing your velocity, isn't like providing that gravity slingshot.
Yeah. The idea of diminishing returns.
Then it is like, you know, then it's time to leave orbit.
Yeah. Yep.
For the Andromeda system. And I just felt like I had to say that.
So we've been seeing that. We saw that with previous employees. We're like, okay, the velocity is decreasing and this person is experiencing diminishing returns. And we've definitely seen that with Stanley. Like, man, he's given us so much, but he's receiving diminishing returns on what he's providing to us. And so you know that this is sort of like winding down. And so when they come in and say, hey, it's time for me to move on, there's not really like it's bittersweet because it's like, okay, this is the part that we've been thinking about for the last 18 months. Is at some point you're going to walk in here, and I do try to set every relationship when a work relationship, whether they're coming to work for me or I'm going to work for them, that I know someday I'm going to be looking this person in the eye, and we're going to have a conversation about whether I'm leaving. And every person that I've ever left, I've lied to, because I don't want to hurt their feelings. Because I feel like they can't deal with the truth of, like, I remember leaving one of my jobs where that place was such a huge mess that I wasn't sure how to clean it up, but I knew that a couple people really needed to be let go. And I lied to the face of my CEO that it has been a pleasure. I appreciate it. I'm leaving because I have other opportunities. And the reality was, I'm leaving because your CTO is a sociopath, narcissist, and an absolute nightmare. And every day that I come in here, it makes me depressed. And
you wouldn't let him have it?
I didn't want to burn that bridge. But you know what turns out? By lying to him, I burned the bridge. Because later on, the rest of the employees got together and said, hey, this is a narcissistic sociopath and you have to get rid of him right now or we're all pretty much going to walk. And instead, so I had the opportunity to tell the truth with relatively little consequence, but it's a small world and I didn't want to burn a bridge. I was so concerned about the immediate effects to a relationship that I wouldn't have the hard, honest conversation. And so it was because of that kind of stuff. We have a couple of values. I know that we're a little over the normal time, but we have a couple of values around this that are the literal reasons that I wanted to run a company instead of work for somebody else because I didn't see it out there. And so I want to cover a couple of those. One of them is... I guess the last thing we'll talk about is the exit interview one, where you just bite the bullet and have the exit interview. I think we talked about that maybe in a Lessons We Learned podcast, but man, that's so important. But the other big one is when it's time for someone to go, every other job I've ever worked in or seen has it go like this. You ply your quiet whisper network of people and say, hey, please don't tell anybody, but I'm kind of looking around for a new job. But I'm looking for something. And so your ability to find new work is constrained to the people that you can reach out to without disturbing without notifying your current workplace.
Right.
And I find that extremely odious and very backwards. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier today, I can't remember how you said it, but it was like you had sort of like a reason that you described that maybe things work that way. And I actually think it has merit to it.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that, you know, I don't know if it's some like sort of, you know, kick back to like feudal times, you know, or kind of some sort of human instinct of, you know, here you have like this, you know, these people who are bonded to the land and this expectation, this entitlement that they're going to work for you. And, you know, if someone is going to leave and go on to some other place, it's, you know, it's not just an economic disruption, it's a moral offense. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, that there's this kind of expectation around that. I, you know, of course, I see it very, very differently. But I think that you were saying that there's just, you know, it's even just the matter of simple economics. And maybe if it's simpler than that, then maybe the solution is even simpler.
Well, I think it's all, you know, I giving it some thought, I think it's really a mixture of both. Like, you show up somewhere and they're like, "Do you, Stanley Stewart, pledge fealty unto the front side?" Like, so, and then you get somewhere because you're like, "Oh yeah, obviously I do. Such fealty, so many fealty. I have all the fealty for you. What's up? What's the pay schedule again? It's, first and 15th. So
I think it was definitely more like that. You know, back in the bad old days,
certainly, like you identify as an employee. I always get a little cringy when I see, tweets and blog posts about like, "Oh, this person is a new like front sider," you know, like, really? Yeah. Like, their identity is not that they work here. However, they are a part of this group of people, and you can't be a part of a group of people without letting that seep into your identity somewhat, unless you're like really, really like reality show-ish. Like, "I'm not here to make friends." So you are going to wind up identifying with that group of people, and I'm okay with that, but I'm not necessarily okay with wrapping your identity up in the, especially the name of the company that you work for, a GitHubber, yeah, and blah, 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 blah.
I just admit it. Frontsider just doesn't sound cool.
It sounds, it sounds like a British TV show, like the EastEnders. Frontsiders? So.
Man.
Blasters, frontsiders!
How long have you been cultivating that British accent?
I don't know.
It's pretty impressive.
it's a labor of love. I'm definitely an Anglophile. I love Hoppin' Bobbin' Here Comes the Baby show on BBC, mm-hmm, where they have a baby every episode.
Really?
Not really, but my wife loves it.
Wait, is that the midwife show?
Yeah. It's I'm pretty sure it's called Hobbin' Bobbin' Here Comes the Baby.
Is that what I thought you called it? The Crowning English.
I did not. That's amazing, though. And on that bombshell. I want to say that my personal value has became at that point, like, if I ever, I used to say, if I ever run a company, I'm going to require that our employees twice a year go interview somewhere so that they can recalibrate their sense of market value and understand that they have options, and that the default is that we have open discussion about people evaluating their options. It's not something that you want to do all the time. You can't sit and like reevaluate your life every day, but periodically, once or twice a year, you really need to sit down and say, "All right, I'm re-upping at the company I currently work at." You're basically renegotiating that this is a place I want to continue to work. I know that I have options, but I'm re-upping at the place that I'm at, and not just because of inertia. And we didn't really follow through on that, but I want the spirit of that to live. And so when Stanley comes and says, "Hey, listen, it's time for me to move on," okay, well, let's figure out a way where you work part-time and job search part-time. It's really crucial to me that that is something that is open and acceptable behavior. That because the purpose of this is to launch them onto that next thing. And so when they go into that phase of things, it is not a violation of their loyalty or trust, or the phase. It is the culmination of the purpose.
It's not a shameful act.
No.
Right.
It's like, okay, we did it. Like, this is why you came here. Now watch how different your options are as a result of having had the experience of working with us, and ply our network and ply our, you know, recommendations, and like, everything that we can do for future success for this person, because our relationship is so much bigger than whatever time we get to work together. And that is the, I would say it is the key expression of our values. And so it's in that moment that we decide who we are as a company. And so more so than pretty much anything else, there are lots of little things that add up, but it's that moment, because that's, again, the expression of the purpose of your time here is what happens now. And that's what we didn't see in the world. And if somebody else would do that, and if lots of other companies would do that, I could really relax a lot.
Yeah. Are there any companies out there like that, you know?
Hit us up. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, hit me up. Yeah.
So that we can send people your way, because we can't hire everybody we want to work with. So
maybe, you could hire me. You could hire Brandon.
Yeah, I'm so tired. I told somebody on Twitter that if you ever want to hire a consultancy owner away from their consultancy, you just tap on their shoulder and whisper in their ear, tap, 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 you don't have to do this anymore. And they're yours.
So true.
But we do it for reasons, Charles. We do it for reasons. This is so much harder than a regular job, but it's not really for us to sit and complain about how hard our how hard our jobs are, because the trade-off is it's deeply fulfilling to be able to make those kind of decisions, be able to stick to them, and then not go out of business as a result, but actually see something good happen and then broadcast to the world. Like, there's just – if I weren't doing this, I would really miss that. So yeah. As much as we love Stanley, we miss him. If he hasn't already found 9 jobs by the time this podcast airs, not hiring him would be a huge mistake. It has been
a delight. I told him, luckily we live in the hill country, but he can just point to any mountain and I'll happily climb it and sing his praises to the tunes of Steely Dan.
I'm trying to think which Steely Dan song that is, but for him, it's probably Hey 19. He don't remember the Queen of Soul.
All Charles, right. Well,
this has been a day, man.
It has been a day.
And the good news is it's lunchtime, so we got more of it having been a day ahead of us.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
All right.
All right, man. Well, I hope you have a wonderful week, and I look forward to having a slightly potentially more technical conversation or hearing one.
Yeah, maybe we'll see each other in the hall.
Yeah. We'll bump into each other on the way to the restroom.
Yeah, if you're over by the water cooler, just hang out for a few minutes. Maybe I'll drop by.
Yeah. All right. Okay. See you around. All right. See you around when I see you.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.